Hi, this is Rick Telberg, and this is a CPA Trendlines podcast.
Hi, I'm Liz Gold with CPA Trendlines, and today's guest is Laura Durham, CPA and Principal of Kind Accounting Services in Loveland, Colorado. Laura graduated from Colorado State University with a BS in Business Administration. After graduation, she worked for Arthur Anderson on the audit team. She moved into the corporate world at Swift & Company, where she was with international accounting teams. And her last corporate position was finance manager at Woodward, Inc. She specializes in 280E compliance, IRS audit assistance, and IT support. Welcome to the show, Laura. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Liz. Thanks for having me.
So tell us the story. You're in Colorado, near Fort Collins, I believe, in Loveland. So talk to us about how you got into cannabis.
Well, so I've always been a proponent of cannabis. And I don't think I actually mentioned this when we talked about a year ago, but my ex-husband had been diagnosed with MS shortly before we were married. And that was right around the time that the medical legalization was happening in Colorado. And so I understood what optic neuritis was and how the pain, how cannabis is supposed to minimize that pain. And so that kind of tugged at my strings. But I always felt like I didn't understand why it was illegal. So when we passed recreational here in Colorado, I was all for it. I hadn't thought about entering into the industry. It was really because I was frustrated with the corporate world and, trying to do too many things, a single mom at that point, and talking with a consultant or a friend of mine, they mentioned that the cannabis industry was really struggling to find CPAs willing to work with them. And I understand that, especially if you have an established business and this is something new and you don't want to risk it all. But for me, that was perfect because it gave me the opportunity to say, great, I'd love to come out and help these businesses. And I don't have, a whole practice that's built up that I can risk losing if the Colorado Board of Accountancy says this is not okay. Mm-hmm. But soon after I entered it, the Board of Accountancy did come out and say this is fine to work with legal, licensed cannabis companies.
Mm-hmm. And so, because you were working in private industry and then you decided to sort of open your firm.
Exactly. Right? Yep.
Yeah.
And really at that time I expected to do really what I had always done, which was accounting. But at that point, within the first month of being out there, I realized that it was really taxes that people were needing help with. I was thinking I'd help administratively of helping fill out paperwork and stuff like that, but it really became taxes is what they need. So I have kind of put most of my training into taxes and specifically into 280E.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know that's a sore spot. So how did you end up getting your first client?
Back then, I want to say that it was somebody from, I think, Gondrepreneur or, one of these websites where I just kind of went out and made all these free listings, just putting my name out there. And the first couple months, I didn't have anybody reach out. I was just working on my website and doing some training of my own, learning QuickBooks. Then I got my first client a couple months after that, and just worked on his books for about a year while I continued to work in the private industry. And after about probably a year and a half of doing it on my own, I realized that, okay, this is something I can do, and this is something I need to do for my health. Just the corporate world every quarter end, I was finding myself stressed and chest pains and I realized I just needed a change where I could manage my workload appropriately.
And had control, when you run your own business. But so I think the last time we spoke was March of 2018 or around that time. And so, how has your firm changed and grown since then?
So, we've increased revenues, gosh, I think 20% or so. From last year to date, and we've added on more clients, and I think the biggest thing is that we've added on more quality clients, those who understand the need of our services and are willing to pay for it and willing to work with us, as they grow. So that's been a big thing. We've also, we've added on a bookkeeper who will actually be starting next week, but she helped us out during the tax season as an intern. And so that will be nice because that will give us the ability to do some tasks that we maybe refer out at this point. You know, if we don't think we can be cost efficient for somebody, we'll often introduce them to another bookkeeper. And so now we can at least hopefully keep that in-house. So that's probably been the biggest growth, but we've also done, more tax resolution. We've, purchased a customer management software that has a client portal. So things like that, I would say really we've just grown in our own, management of the company.
That's great. Yeah, no, that's great. And so I think this leads into sort of my next question is sort of, you know, who do you have working with you? Like, how big is your team? And are you virtual? Do you have an office?
We're virtual. We've got five of us that I would say are not, none of us are necessarily full-time, maybe more so during tax season. I've got in Fort Collins, Aaron Stoltz, who is working towards his CPA. He's just finishing his hours. And he has been working out of his home, but recently moved into an office. He's got a side business that he does consulting for. Mm-hmm. Then we have somebody in Conifer, that's Becca Quiricone, and she's a CPA, and she works remotely, but similarly, she has other clients that she works with that she built before working, before getting hired on with Woodward. And then myself, and then my boyfriend, John Clark, who is an ex-engineer and a software engineer. And so he helps manage the business. He helps with the client relations and just making sure that we're on track. And then Christine McDonald is our new person who's from Fort Collins that will be coming in on the bookkeeping. And she will be doing some from her home, but also coming to my home office or to Aaron's office that he has.
So it's all in Colorado.
Everybody's in Colorado. Yeah, and we really do focus with clients within Colorado. So we've got one client that's outside of Colorado that their state, they just could not find a CPA to work with them. But we have to kind of manage what we do because we don't have reciprocity there. And so just making sure that we're kind of keeping it to the bookkeeping or federal taxes.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that you just stick to Colorado because I talk to a lot of firms that are, you know, all over the place and, you know, in multi-states and stuff. And I would imagine that there's some benefit, you know, to just staying in Colorado, not just staying, but like being in Colorado and working with clients, you know, in your state because it's less regulations with less like, right. Cause you can, it's,
right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, definitely. California is extremely different with how their organizations have to be set up from the beginning and managed. And so for us, yeah, understanding Colorado's rules through and through, and there's enough variety that we need to stay on top of knowing different cities and different counties,
right.
What their excise taxes are or what their different deadlines are. And so it works out for us. I don't think we really have the desire at this point to branch out of Colorado because there's also just enough business here. There's enough people who are needing help.
Right. Which is great, you know, and that sounds sort of like a perfect fit. And so just talk to us a little bit about your sweet spot clients. You know, who are they? Are they across the industry, you know, dispensaries, processors, cultivators, you know, distributors, dispensary owners? I think I already said that, but who are they? And how big are they?
Oh, go ahead.
No, and how big are they?
How big are they? Okay. You know, we really do have a wide variety of clients from dispensaries to large grows to small grows to hemp to cupcakes and bath bombs. And I would say that at this point, we have a lot of hemp clients. Do they do different things with hemp? Again, some grow, some extract, some are putting it into a product. But I don't know if there's necessarily a particular section that is our sweet spot. It really is more about, I think, personality. It's more about the clients that we just get along with that, again, recognize, oh, yeah, here's the services you need. Those that work with us as a team and that we just enjoy dealing with, those are the ones that we kind of maybe bend over backwards to keep. And there's a good amount of those.
Mm-hmm. So if it's a dispensary owner, is it one dispensary or is it maybe multiple across the state?
It's typically multiple across the state.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of our dispensaries, I think we only have one dispensary that just has one location. Most of them have a few. And some of them, you know, I think I mentioned last year, their mergers and acquisitions was what I expected to be seeing. And definitely we've seen that, you know, of somebody who owns a dispensary is kind of looking for another license to buy in that, usually in the same region, you know, maybe 60 miles apart or something, but...
Gotcha. You mean from another dispensary owner?
Exactly, yeah. You know, we definitely have clients who are saying, and we have it really on both sides, of, hey, we kind of want to get out of this cultivation business. It's just not paying what we thought it would. Let us know if you know anybody who's looking to buy. And similarly, we've had on the other side, a dispensary owner saying, hey, I'm looking at expanding and I want to buy some licenses if you know of anybody who's wanting to get out.
So I'm curious because, you know, I talk to a lot of people when you say buying a license, you know, first of all, I guess I didn't know people could do that. And second of all, because I thought they had just like...
It requires an MED approval.
Right. Okay.
So there's definitely a process that has to go through and that person has to be vetted and the MED has to approve it before officially the license can be transferred. But yes, there is a market value out there for acquiring a license that's already in existence.
And what is that in Colorado, just so we have an idea?
The market rate?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I don't think I could even throw out a number.
Okay.
The last one that I saw, it was buried in with, you know, the assets that were being purchased and stuff. And so it wasn't ever officially broken out. We backed into a number that we figured was the fair market, basically goodwill. Right. Yeah.
But it would be like multiple thousands of dollars, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say probably 30,000. It probably also depends on the location. You know, if it's in a location that has only allowed, let's say, five dispensaries, and you're looking to acquire that number five, that's going to probably be worth a lot more than somewhere that you're acquiring license, but the city is still issuing is, you know, more.
Right. Right, 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 right. Wow, that's so interesting. So in terms of your clients, and obviously this is going to differ amongst like what they're actually doing, but you know, what are their biggest challenges that they are bringing you?
So I would say banking is definitely still an issue. We have more clients with banks now than we did a couple of years ago, but the smaller players just can't afford the fees. And so those are the ones that I would say it's just still a struggle in getting data back and forth and in, I guess kind of having that third party source. It's nice as accountants to be able to look through the bank statement and understand what happened and ask questions. And when you're relying on emails back and forth or a spreadsheet, even if, you know, you set up a spreadsheet and say, hey, this is how I want your cash log to be done, it never fails that they're not going to reconcile it every single day. They're not going to, there ends up being money that gets lost that you just can't deduct.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah. And one of the challenges that has kind of gone away, or I shouldn't say gone away, but last year when we talked, it was still a big issue of the AMR, the average market rate, that if you didn't have a contract it was the way that the Department of Revenue was charging excise tax. At that point, a couple of years ago, they weren't offering, they were basically saying, if you transferred flour, we're going to tax you at this average market rate. And the reality was the market had gotten flooded and it just, that price couldn't be supported. And so people were paying excise taxes on double the amount that they were actually able to sell the product for. And so luckily the Department of Revenue did react when growers were complaining. And so they've gotten better about updating the rates more often, but more specifically, the market rates have gone down significantly where, let's see, flour used to be $1,200 per pound. Now it's only at $780, or it just went up to $806. And so that's a big difference, you know, when you're trying, and then they also now have broken out an area, if you have a contract price, that you can go ahead and put in that contract price and get taxed on the actual amount of the sale.
Wow.
Yeah, that's been helpful. That's been that was really a challenge. And I think that's probably why a lot of growers were looking at selling over the last year, is because they couldn't handle it between the excise taxes and then seeing what the income taxes looked like, even though they didn't actually earn anything, you know, they just, it was a struggle, but luckily that's been taken care of. So I think banking is really probably the biggest thing at this point that would change our world.
Yeah. I mean, I think farming, you know, cultivators, it seems like it's just a challenging aspect of the industry, you know, in terms of making money. And I think, I mean, I'm in Oregon and there are so many farms in Oregon, and, you know, how do you get your product out there and how do you differentiate yourself in a market that is already oversaturated? So it seems like it's challenging Colorado too for a variety of reasons, but
absolutely. Well, it's just so expensive to get into. I think a lot of people underestimate getting into, you know, okay, here's what it's going to cost, but there ends up being delays, you know, a windstorm takes off the roof or extra costs, and it's a struggle. But it's been exciting to see those that were really struggling last year now say, hey, we were able to catch up on all of our excise taxes, you know, we're doing good, and we're finally out of the red. And so that's exciting to see.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so when you bring on a new client, you know, how do you vet them and how do you make sure, I mean, obviously it's about the connection you were talking about earlier and making sure it's a good, you know, personality fit. But how do you vet them and know you want to work with them?
Well, so a lot of our clients do come from word of mouth. And so at that point, that's helpful because A, we know a little bit about them before we talk, but the people also know what whoever's referring also knows kind of the clients that we're looking for. For those though that do come to us as from a third party source, one of the first things, and this, I don't know if this is necessarily vetting them, but we used to offer free consults and we've done away with that, where it's $80 for up to an hour. If we only need 20 minutes, that's fine. But we need them to pay that in advance and sign an engagement letter before we do that first call. And that has just helped us to weed out those who can't afford, you know, who are in that early stage and don't recognize that they need an accountant and are going to end up being a struggle for us to collect money from. That's mm-hmm. just one little small step that we found has helped us weed out those that are going to be a struggle for us to make money on. You know, we help everybody, but we're not a not-for-profit.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, but then, you know, the other piece that we really do is that we're big on, again, it's about personality. It's about being able to read people. But if I feel like someone's not being forthcoming, if their story continues to change, or if, you know, we've talked about entities and then all of a sudden we hear that, and there's this other entity that rents to us and I own it and, you know, things like that. We do a lot of just questions about, I would say, that kind of tell us the ethics of somebody. You know, mm-hmm. we have no problem talking about opportunities, what's in the gray area, but if they're trying to hide things from us or if they're clearly wanting us to do something that is not allowed, then we have no interest in that business.
Right. No, that makes sense. I think that's probably very wise. and so, you know, we didn't really talk about your services. I mean, I know that you do 280E compliance and, you know, taxes, but what are your bread and butter services?
So we, like I said before, we kind of tend to, in the past, we've not done as much bookkeeping. You know, we will certainly get in and categorize people's expenses so that we can provide their financials. A lot of our clients our sales and use tax, excise tax returns, monthly financials. That's probably about half of our business. The other half really is taxes. Mm-hmm. So we've got partnerships, we've got S-corps, we've got C-corps, we've got LLCs, and then we also have individuals. Some of them are maybe family members or people who aren't in the cannabis business, but that we've networked with and are going with us for their individual taxes. And same thing, not all businesses are cannabis. We have other businesses as well. I'm sorry, can you bring me back to the question?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just asking about the bread and butter services, but I mean, I think you answered it.
We do also do payroll. But yeah, I would say that right now we are offering most everything. Except for that day-to-day paying your bills and sending your invoices and stuff like that.
Gotcha. And so, as a cannabis CPA, I fondly use the term cannabis CPA, in Colorado, which is obviously a pioneer state in the industry, I mean, what do you think are the benefits of being a CPA in your state?
Well, I think because we were the first or one of the first, I think that we've probably seen more IRS audits than other states. Mm-hmm. It takes a couple years. They wait for you to do it wrong for 3 years until they come back and say, oh, now we're going to audit you, you know? Luckily for us, we haven't had any of the tax returns that we've done audited, but we have had our clients audited for tax returns prior to us. Or for the ones that were, included, I guess, in the time frame. And because of that, this is not to say that there are not audits still happening in Colorado or that anything is different with us, but I haven't seen audits come up in the last year, whereas the previous couple of years, it felt like there were a lot going on. And so I think it's probably because we've learned those first couple tax preparers that were not applying 280E, that's what triggered the audit. And so now we all know, if I look at a tax return and I see that it wasn't done 280E the prior year, then I say we need to go back and amend.
Mm-hmm.
So I just imagine that the IRS is focusing a little bit more on other states because that's where they're seeing the glaring, this is wrong, you didn't apply 280E.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah,
that's probably the biggest thing. And then I guess I love that in Colorado, it is very accepted. There is not judgment like there are in other states. I know that in general, there's more people who are fans these days. Not everybody in Colorado smokes, mm-hmm. but everybody seems to be open to it and recognize that it's a legit industry. And just because you're in the industry doesn't mean that you're a stoner.
Right. The taboo is less of a taboo,
Exactly.
And so, I mean, are there any trends that you're noticing? I mean, this could be in any area, nationwide in cannabis, in terms of like the work that you do or the work you're seeing with clients or, anything that you're surprised by?
Yeah. I mean, I think the trends are probably again about public perception that uh-huh. it's more acceptable now. And that's great to see there's more legislators, there's more politicians who are supporting it and who are pushing for change saying we need banks. I think that I've definitely seen more CPA firms and more financial services being offered to cannabis than it was a couple of years ago. There's more CPE available. It just seems like there's more firms out there that, like you said, are crossing multiple states. And I think that's good, though. I think that we need... sometimes, we need more collaboration. We need to, nobody really has a standard process of how to calculate inventory in this industry using 473. We have our own process internally that we use, and it is based on those IRS audits. But as I look at different forums for 280E, it's clear that we need collaboration. We need to have more people out there who can say, oh, that's a good point. You know, here's one thing I've thought, or here's one thing I found in the audit that I was looking at. And so I think that's good. I think it's good to see that. I definitely think, you know, CBD is exploding. And I keep thinking, man, this is going to get to be, you know, again, just flooded. There's going to be way more product. But in all honesty, more people are open to taking CBD than were a year ago. And mm-hmm. so I suppose, yeah, the supply is exploding, but now we also are seeing the demand is great as well. And people are willing to look at those different things like bath bombs of, well, how can that be done? Or looking at athletes and getting them to recognize that there's benefits there. And then I do still think there's going to continue to be mergers and acquisitions, and we're going to continue to see some of those larger players maybe start crossing states. Again, they're still going to have to be state specific. I know we already have a couple of them, but it'll be interesting to see. I would love to see federal legalization, and then it would be interesting to see what happens there, because right now it really is so different by the states of how you have to even form your entity, that there will be a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, no, I like all your answers. I mean, I agree. And the piece about, you know, all the different products that are out there and all the companies that are forming to create these products. I mean, I guess it makes sense, because if when you go to the grocery store, you have like a million choices for dish soap. So I guess it does make sense.
Right.
You know, there's going to be a lot of different brands to choose from for your cannabis or your CBD. Eventually it'll be about brand differentiation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I go to a mailbox, or we have a mailbox locally, and next to it there's a gas station, and they sell CBD there. And it's just interesting that it's like, yeah, everywhere we go now, I'm seeing. I think Denver, Carl's Jr. in Denver, I think was going to make a CBD burger.
Wow.
It's just like, I don't know if it's somewhere though, but
it's wild. It's wild, but that's what it is. Like a wild. Yeah, it's great. So well, Laura, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm Liz Gold with CPA Trendlines. Until next time.